Hey guys, welcome to the Man in the Pew Show. I'm your host, Phil Mershon, and this show is brought to you by maninthepew.com. This is the show for everyday men who want to follow Jesus every day, at work, at home, at church, and at play. Today's conversation is with Paul Colligan, and we're going to get into the trenches talking about how technology can feed our faith. But before we get there, I'd like to read a couple of verses from Romans chapter 12 with the Apostle Paul. He says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will." That phrase, "be transformed by the renewing of your mind," is what caught my attention as I thought about the things that Paul shares with us in this interview today. He's talking about being deliberate with how we use technology and protect ourselves from technology. I think we also can be intentional about the ways that we feed our soul through what we think about, through what we feed our brain with, what kinds of things do we read and listen to and watch. There's a lot of mindless, mind-numbing entertainment available today, and then there's lots of things that are great. So which do you do? Which do you use? Well, I hope today's interview encourages you. And so with that, let me turn it over to today's episode with Paul Colligan. I'm very excited today to be with Paul Colligan. And if you don't know who Paul is, he is a friend of mine, but he is also the author of the How to Podcast books. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Paul, I'd love to have our guests start off by telling a little bit of their spiritual journey. How did you come to faith? What was like a significant marker? And then maybe give us a little bit of a backstory on what's going on in your life today. Like, are you married? Do you have kids? What's tell us a little bit about your story.
Was raised in a Christian family, good believing parents. But part of every kid's transition is when do things become yours? You know, when, you know, your dad had a major in college, or maybe he didn't, maybe he had a path he took, you know, when do you pick yours? You know, your parents go to church and for a while you go because they do, but when do you go because it's you? I think everybody has that point in their lives. I came to a realization of the faith my sophomore year of high school and began to claim it as my own. Nothing major. It was just a moment of realization. Yeah, this is me. This is what I want. A mutual friend of ours, Duncan Sprague, was largely responsible for that. So to this day, I still hold Duncan in a special place in my heart. But that's where it all started. Where it got interesting was I grew up in Europe. My folks worked for the U.S. military. And it was an exciting time. It was a lot of fun, but it was also interesting. It had its own challenges. And my senior year of high school, I had applied to a school that I had basically a 99.99% chance of getting into. And because I applied to that school, I don't want to criticize the school now, but the school that I thought I wanted to go to, you know, all things looked good that I was absolutely going to go to it. I, right before the first week of February, so January, I got early acceptance from the same school in that system. I got early acceptance, and it was one way, way, way high up the marks. So my guidance counselor, everybody said, oh, yeah, you're going to the school you want to go to. You're going to the school you want to go to. And it was so much that I actually burned all my other college applications in a bit of a dramatic moment. I know it's hard to tell. I'm kind of dramatic at times. and this is back, you know, pre-internet, pre all these days when you can't really get something FedEx to yourself. I was in Germany. And the day before spring break, I got not a rejection letter, Phil, but I got a rejection postcard.
No.
From this school that I wanted the day before spring break. And I had no other options other than this one school that I had applied to that I got into that was great. But I'd never been there. I knew nothing about the school. I knew nobody there. I knew nothing. Kind of freaked out. Spring break, went on a trip with my youth group to Mallorca, Spain, a little tiny island in the middle of the Mediterranean, away from everybody, literally everybody. And I'm on the beach talking to my good buddy Mike. The only other person on the beach is a youth pastor from another one of the military bases about 25, 30 feet away. I'm talking to Mike. I'm pouring out my heart to him. Mike, I'm mad. I'm mad at me for being arrogant. I'm mad at God for doing this to me. I'm mad. And the youth pastor rolls over and he says, "Where are you going?" And I go, "Santa Barbara." And he goes, "You know, I just accepted a youth pastoring job in Santa Barbara, California." When do you get there? I told him the date. He goes, "Well, I'm going to get there about a week before you do." But, you know, at least you got one friend. And at this moment, in the middle of the Mediterranean, in the middle of nowhere, you know, there was some looking out for me. There was some providence for me. You know, I needed to hear it from Rod on the beach. It was funny. His boss was actually my youth pastor. His boss knew the whole story. He just never thought to tell me because I needed to hear it on that beach, independent from everybody else, with just me, Mike, and Rod. And that was the point where I realized that the relationship is a bit more personal. The relationship is a bit more two-way. The relationship is a bit more, there's some real care. There's some real individual opportunities here. And it was just a piece of providence that just spoke mightily to my soul. And it was fascinating. And funny thing is, you know, I got in the country and stayed with Rod, and I went to his church the next day because, you know, when you stay with somebody, you go to the church the next day. And funny enough, I met Heidi at that church, who 5 years later I married. So there's a whole bunch of providence in that story. It just made me realize God's personable. God cares for the individual. And it directed my life from then.
I'm sure every listener here has a story where we know if God hadn't been there in that moment. And yeah. My own story of how I met my wife has a lot of similarities, and I'll tell that story some other day. But that is so cool to see that God led you to this moment of despair. He allowed you to get there where it was unmistakable that he had provided this path.
A lot of people could have pulled me out of that. You know, I could have told my youth pastor on and it was a long bus ride down to Majorca, plus ferry and all that stuff. I could have told him, said, "Oh, yeah, you know, Rod Taylor's going. You should talk to him." That would have been the moment I needed. You know, and the fact that it was blocked from Dave, you know, I needed that moment. I really needed that moment. And that moment was providential.
Yeah.
Not necessary, but providential. And I think that's important.
Well, and I think we all need those moments where God shows up to us, even in a surprising and dramatic way that just assures us he is real. Because if we're honest with ourselves, as we go through this journey of life, journey of faith, as you've been on, it sounds like for at least a couple decades, there are those times when you wonder. When you wonder, is he there? And you can look back to those anchor points and say, he's personal. It's not just the God of the Bible, and certainly that is the greatest evidence, but he has been made himself real to me in these kind of ways. So
yeah.
I love that. Now, Paul, you have made a career out of working in the technical space, working online. You've been in podcasting for a very long time from the early days. You've been writing about it. You've been talking about technology. You help people launch their own podcast. Like I know you helped Donald Miller with his, and there's probably some others that we would recognize, but you have a passion for redeeming technology, I believe, and not just being scared of it, because we all know the risks, and some of the other episodes we've already have talked about pornography and the dangers. But I know it's a passion of yours to talk about how we can grow in our faith, given the technology that's out there. So maybe we can spend some time just talking about things that you've discovered that are helpful that guys listening here can benefit from.
Definitely, I'd love to, and you know I love this topic. Let me give 30 seconds of setup, though. We have to make decisions. What's morally good? What's morally bad? And what is morally neutral? You know, there are things, you know, I don't believe there's any concept or room for Christian pornography. You know, for instance, I don't think that one works.
Right.
We have to make that decision. And a lot of us make that decision based on what we've heard. A lot of us make that decision based on what we fear. A lot of us make that decision. I think it's some of the wrong places. And you know, if God is personable, if God reached me on a beach in Majorca in the late 80s, then I'm here at this time for a reason. You know, and it's funny because we Christians sometimes tend to, you know, we have this big list of all the things, and like, well, you know, if I break my arm, you know, a sling is spiritual, but which is technology, but maybe the pain pill isn't. Or maybe if the pain pill is an opioid, that's not, but this kind of pain pill is. Or, you know, when we make all these decisions in a quest for spirituality, in a place where God put us, which I always find to be really silly. So I, outside of the faith, but I think it integrates perfectly into the faith, there's two ways to look at technology. There's only two ways. The entire world chopped up into two ways. Tech is here to make our life better, or tech is here to make our life harder. That's it. That's the only choice that we have. And I believe there are huge companies based on both premises. I believe Microsoft, at its core, believes that tech is here to make our life harder, and Microsoft is here to help you sort through that. That's why you can have, with Microsoft, a mail program that gives you 256 color code variations of your email folders. You know, we're going to help you sort through all this craziness. It's out to get you, but Microsoft's on your side. I believe that's kind of who they are as a core principle. I believe Apple is a core principle. It's like, wow, this tech's cool. Let's do some really cool things with it. And I think that's the path that the believer should take. You know, this tech is really powerful. We're in a really, really interesting time. Let me give some real simple examples, but then let's go a little bit deep. So my church, my proudest success story in podcasting and my longest running podcast and is my church's podcast. I went in one day, spent about 45 minutes with the church secretary, and we figured out how to take the weekly sermon and put it on the podcast. About 6 years later, they moved from one audio product to another, and the church secretary needed a 15-minute warm-up, and that's it. And every week, consistently, for the last decade, we've been putting up our things as a podcast. And not because we're the popular, cool tech church, but now, if I miss a service on Sunday, I know the podcast is there Monday or Tuesday, and I can be part of the dialogue for the church that week. And even more popular, it's a smaller church, and you know, we always have this, well, I really want to hear the sermon. Well, you can hear the sermon on Monday. Go downstairs and serve on Sunday. We even had a short little time where people said, oh, I'd love to serve, but, you know, I love the preaching. Well, that's great. Here's a little MP3 player. Get the podcast that way. Go downstairs and serve. And so now the believer can fill their week with podcasts of sermons if they need those. Maybe you're at a church where the strength of the church is not in the teaching. Maybe you need better teaching. Maybe you need deeper teaching. Maybe you need some other kind of teaching. Here's the great thing. iTunes is full of it. The believer now can get as much teaching as they need, plus for the next 10,000 years right now, with the device that 99.9% of your audience has in their pocket right now. So Sunday can change. Sunday can now become a moment of service if that's, you know, where you are. So it could be a moment of maybe loving people in the audience, you know, maybe just the behind the scenes stuff, because you can be taught somewhere else independently. And that always excited me about podcasting. You know, many times I'd taken home the cassette, many times I'd taken home the CD, but once the sermon moved to a podcast, that changed the game. And then what was really funny was we started looking at the numbers, and about a third of all listenings of the sermon actually starts happening for the podcast. And one of our pastors is a teacher of preaching at Multnomah College. So a lot of times he'll have students listen to his stuff. But even there, students are busy. He can now say, hey, listen to what I did on Monday. Let's deconstruct it. But you don't necessarily have to come to my church, your church where you're serving, where you're loving at. And I've always just been impressed that the tech makes it possible. Everybody in the morning, you know, you rush to church, you rush to something. You know, did you remember your Bible? And we could get into a whole thing about habits and that kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is I got the Bible on my phone now.
Right.
I'm never without the Word. That's fantastic. That could be that might be the only reason to have a smartphone, but I also have everything else on there, which is fantastic. Social media. You know, I once heard, actually, I think it was Donald Miller, actually. Donald Miller once said, I don't need to know that my friend Joe met a girl at Burger King. And I totally get that statement, and we all have a friend, Joe, like that we don't need to know about. But the funny thing is I have a couple of friends who will meet a girl at Burger King, and as a brother, I need to follow up with them on that. You know, as a brother, I need to go, hey, that girl you met at Burger King, what's going on there?
Right.
You know, and so social media can be a distraction, or it can be a wonderful moment of bringing the body together. We've got a member of our church right now whose son was tragically hit on the ski slopes. And he's in ICU right now, fighting for his life. And the prayer community, we're up to date with what's going on Facebook. The dad's able to really express what's going on, what the needs are. You know, people don't, Christians, we're not good at dealing with tragedy. You know, we don't know what to do, you know, when he's been able to say, hey, please don't come by and visit today. We're exhausted. And we just need that. We want that. You know, yes, Facebook could be Candy Crush, and yes, Facebook could be all this distraction. But right now, the body is rallying behind this guy because of the smartphone. You know, and he'll probably miss the sermon on Sunday, but you know what? He could listen to it because of his smartphone. And, you know, I bet you when they, you know, he was up on the mountain, his kid got medevaced. They couldn't get on the plane or on the helicopter. They had to drive immediately to the airport. I don't know if he had the Bible in his car, but you know when he had his phone? And I'm sure he's been in the Word a lot the last couple of days.
Absolutely. No. Yeah, I think Facebook in particular, you know, the Facebook groups are powerful. My assistant's son got diagnosed with a rare form of cancer last year. And it was amazing the way that she was able to pull together hundreds of people. Actually, she didn't do it. Friends of hers did, who yep. were able to step up all across the country and support she and her husband through this time.
Yeah.
And to me, that was like, okay, here's this technology being used for great good, because now we're all rallying together to support someone who is in a hard time. And people were doing amazing things of raising money for them, because this is a very expensive thing to care for. And to me, it was a great example of how technology can be used for good. And I'm sure we all have seen those kind of examples.
Missionaries on the field. You know, missionary, you'd get a letter once every 6 months, and you felt a little bad at how much it cost them to print and mail this thing for whatever African country they were in. You know, now you can get daily updates on Facebook. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, you can hear what happened Tuesday, not what the theme for the first two quarters of the year was.
All right, but here's the question. All these things are great, but they can become noise. So, you know, because social media becomes noise at some point. So how do you, for your own faith, keep this practical? Because that's great. You know, I hear from dozens of missionaries through emails and posts, and I'm part of all kinds of groups. At some point, I'm divided and I'm not really present to any of those things. What have you found works to help with that?
Great question. And I think key. I define borders. I define rules. I do things. There are some people I don't follow, everybody who moves. You know, a lot of people do that. My personal profile is hidden on Facebook. The rule is, you know, a lot of people in our space, you know, they play the Facebook public profile sort of a marketing thing, and everybody has their own strategy. But for me, you can't find my personal page unless you know someone who knows me, and you're not going to friend me unless you know the name of my kids. And it's not necessarily, there are a lot of great people who don't know the names of my kids, but the interaction I want to have on that deep intimate level is there. I very seldom join a Facebook group, unfortunately, because I have to go in personally. And then you get this whole awkward thing. You join a Facebook group, you go in personally, then people want to friend you. And because you're going against the grain of not friending everything that moves, you know, people feel insulted. The last thing I want to do is have someone feel bad because I'm just trying to keep some borders and some confines in my life. But I've done it very, very strategically. I have a public email address and I have a private email address. And, you know, 95% of my email goes to the public email address that I never look at. The noise goes away. Of the 5% of the stuff that comes to me, about 90% of that comes all batched at 4 o'clock using a service called SaneMail. There's some stuff that has to come through immediately, and I let that stuff come through, but everything else comes in a batch. So I don't spend all day. There is not a device in my house that beeps when email comes in. Now, I have a phone that beeps when texting comes in, but the amount of people who have my cell phone number is minimal.
Right.
And I will ask people, do not text me about this. The iPhone has a wonderful, I'm sure there's something on the Android side of it probably, but the iPhone has a beautiful thing called Do Not Disturb. And I've got that on right now. I might be getting texts, you know, but I'm giving this time to Phil. And so it's coming in, it's being collected, but I'll catch it at the end of this conversation. And the cool thing is I turn Do Not Disturb on at night. And Do Not Disturb has a feature where some people get the override. I have two elderly parents. We've had falls. We've had all sorts of issues. And they might be calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I would be deeply disturbed if I missed that call.
Right.
But the tech lets me do that. So I draw lines. I draw very, very clear lines. And some of them make me unpopular. Some of them you know, unfortunately, sometimes you have 30 seconds to give a 10-minute explanation, and I can't always do that. And there's some people who have called me arrogant or who have called me out of touch, you know, and fine, I really don't care, but I've drawn lines. A little hack that I can give everybody, Facebook, like you said, is the biggest noisemaker in the world. There's a little tool, and it's a little back door here, and one day I think Facebook will probably change it. But there's a tool called Hootsuite, which is a very, very popular tool in the social media marketing world. And I mean that generically, not your specific organization. And what it does is it lets you set up feeds. And I read Facebook in Hootsuite without all the ads. I read Facebook in Hootsuite as one stream of everything, and I check it once a day. Have I checked it multiple times? Sometimes, yes. With this friend, with the kid, and the ski accident, I've been on multiple times. But I have a filtered view of Facebook with a limited amount of friends. I have friends, we all do, that feel their job every hour is to post something to Facebook. I mute them. I go, I don't want to see any more ads from this website leaning to the left or this website leaning to the right, or, you know, I'm very, very, very purposeful about it. And that's the thing. You can't just embrace it. You have to embrace it purposefully. You have to embrace it with a strategy. But if you don't, it's going to just distract you like crazy. You'll never get anything done.
So I love that. Defining the borders. Yep. Go a little deeper of the strategy that you're using in terms of how you choose, like which podcast you listen to, which sites you go to, which apps on your phone you're using. Because it sounds to me like you're being very intentional about the things that you know are going to feed your faith, feed your mind, feed your life. Talk us through some of the thought process you go through.
Sure. The first thing I want to do always is be realistic, you know, and be true to the core of the situation. Sometimes somebody makes a big promise, and in the big promise, there's a lot of things that fall through the cracks. And sometimes those things that fall through the cracks are really, really important. You know, I had back in the early days, I had someone approach me about a filtered internet service. He wanted to know if I wanted to come on board, maybe be part of the company. And I go, well, I'm all for filtered internet, but let's talk about how you're doing it, you know? And he said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to have a white list, basically a list of approved sites you can go to. And then anything outside of that, we're going to have somebody approve. I'm like, what does that mean? He goes, well, we're going to have people are going to check. And I go, well, what does that mean? Well, you know, basically they're going to hire people to decide whether or not something is porn all day long. To me, that's not acceptable. You don't do that to another human being.
Right.
You just don't.
Yeah, that's not fair to that person.
Exactly. And this guy had all these things. Like, nope, we got to find a better way. So there are a lot of tools, there are a lot of services out there that are not complete, And I want to be careful because there's a lot of holes in these services that can cause a lot of problems. So what do you do about that? Well, one thing I do is the family, we all have devices. My job is to teach my kids how to use these devices. Now, my youngest has, she's 13. She has an iPhone, but she doesn't have data yet. You know, so she can't access the internet whenever, wherever, however she wants. And she has to earn the data. And we're working on a project where she can show me that she earns the data. At this particular moment, we're using a service called Circle by Disney, which is that whole thing is a whole other fascinating story. I'm paying for a monthly service that basically wherever she goes, whatever network she connects to, I've got information about it. Now, yeah, I'm paying $10 a month extra for this, but you know what? My kid's worth it. And yes, technically I'm paying for the data on her phone that I've told them to turn off on the phone side, but you know what? She's worth it. So on apps is a big thing. And what I've done is very simply, I've... The whole family is on one account. And so any app I download automatically gets downloaded my kids' phones. No better filter than that, Phil.
Yeah.
You know, in the social media marketing world, and boy, I'm going to get some dings for this, but I don't care. We're a lot of us love Snapchat. Snapchat is vile. Snapchat is disgusting. And I'm not going to use it. And if my kids are not allowed to use it, And here's the thing, if I ever quote unquote fell or anything and downloaded it, it would download on their devices as well. So I've got that built in kind of accountability that's great. And my Now, Paul, if you think it's disgusting, how do you know if you haven't been there? You know, the classic argument. My 13-year-old really wanted to get into Snapchat. And I said, well, here's what I understand. She said, if you don't know, how can you say this? I said, okay, as a family, dad's going to do this for a week. Let's see what happens. You will not download this to your device. We all agreed. We did this as a family. I've downloaded for a week, and it was actually more revolting than I thought. And I disconnected it from my phone. And I don't care what job, what gig, what client. I'm not playing Snapchat. And those are the lines made. So the devices in my family are filtered, tracked, monitored, and not because of a I expect them to go down the wrong path. They just need to know. I've had friends whose kids didn't think they were monitored and went down some really deep, bad, dark places. And if my kid thinks the background, oh wow, dad knows where I'm going, because you know God knows where you're going too, and your soul knows where you're going. You know, the fact that dad's on that list is just, if I can be a reminder, let's do that. And so I've set that up. So tech-wise, Circle by Disney is the one I really like right now. It's got some holes, but I can work within those holes. Putting the family on iOS only when they go outside of the house is a little bit more expensive, but it allows me the tracking that I need to do. Family's filtered. And if for any reason I were to disconnect my phone from the filtering system, my wife will get a little ding on her phone that says, hey, Paul disconnected his phone from the filtering system. And boy, that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's enough. And the cool thing is that filtering system is based on whatever device I happen to connect to. So we're at a good place. So just strategically going through it all. Now, the flip side to this, though, it got to be key. I've got a dear friend who just tech kind of scares him. And I understand it's kind of scary. And the number one question I always get is how does someone handle this who doesn't do this full time? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm just happy that I do this full time, that I can track this stuff. He's kind of been scared to connect his kids. And here's the deal. The kids are going to leave at some point. And they're great kids. Oh, they're great kids. But, you know, at some point, if they don't have the tools to handle this, some point they'll connect to an unfiltered internet. And if they don't have the tools to make the decision now, you know, and so you gotta pick, you gotta filter, you gotta talk about it. That's what I try to do. Have I been 100% successful? No. You know, I joke with my wife that we'll know how the kids turned out when they're about 35.
Exactly. You know,
forget this when they're in college, do they mess up thing? No, it's gonna go deeper and longer than that. But that's where we're at. So the tech, you know, that's the specific tech. I don't friend everything that moves. I filter everything in Facebook. I run my feed through Hootsuite. I have two different email addresses, one for the public, one for the private. I filter my devices, and I've got connections, you know, if I leave that filter for somebody else to take a look at. I spend the money when I need to. And that's it. You know, Twitter, I follow, my rule on Twitter is I follow less than 100 people. If I want to follow the 101st people, I unfollow someone else. And I just purposely do this. And I think it's the only way to do this. And that's life. You know, we have to purposely anything. You know, somehow, you know, I know people who are absolutely purposeful in every area of their life but social media, and then it sucks them down a hole. And it's not social media's problem. It's like, here's the place where you weren't purposeful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, none of us can actually maintain 2,000 relationships with people in real life. And why do we think we can do that on Facebook or on Twitter or somewhere else? It's an interesting question. Each one of us obviously needs to figure out our own strategy. But I love the way you're explaining the lines that you've created. Now, let's flip that, because you're creating these lines so that you can get the maximum benefit from each one of these things. And I want to just go back. You began by talking about podcasting, and I imagine that you've got a pretty intentional strategy of what podcast you listen to specifically that feed your faith. So maybe talk a little bit about how you go about choosing to do that, and maybe what your listening pattern looks like, where you choose to listen and how you listen.
Well, great question. Let me 30 seconds on the friend thing, because here's a little hack I've done with my kids that has been tremendously successful. Yes, Phil, we can't have 1,000 friends, period. And you and I can say that, laugh about that, but how many people are following us and that type of thing. But the kids, they have no filter of this. So the rule with my kids is they can follow pretty much whoever, but they just need to ask me. And so here's the process. Hey, Dad, can I follow Elizabeth across the street? Sure. How many friends do you have right now? 80. Huh. Are you really going to give Elizabeth the time she deserves? you know, I'm not necessarily going to say no to Elizabeth or that type of thing unless there's reasons to. But every time I confront somebody, every time I can unfriend somebody, every time I can follow something, we have a quick little conversation. And just a moment. And they know that Dad's going to ask them that question. Therefore, they don't follow as many people as they would like to. So let's talk entertainment. Let's talk stuff that goes into the ears. It's really funny. I work out of the home, so I have a very tiny commute. And it's funny because you'd think the podcaster guy would have a really long commute so he could listen to a lot of podcasts. I use an app called Pocket Casts. Mm-hmm. And Pocket Casts is a nice little aggregator. One of the things that Pocket Casts does is Pocket Casts will let you bookmark and will let you – it's kind of like Netflix. You can go from one device to another and kind of share off, drop off, go off. I have a bunch of podcasts that I subscribe to, many of the faith. Many not of the faith, some in the tech world, and some in different spaces. But because I have this tech, and because I have this unlimited data, let's say I get in the car. Today I've got to drive to a meeting. I've got an hour in the car. Now, most of it will probably be phone, but sometimes you have those times where you call all six people and none of them are available, and then you got 50 minutes for the rest of the thing. I will look at the stuff that feeds my faith. Or I'm sorry, I will look at the stuff that I've got, and what do I need? Do I need some centering? Do I need some podcast of faith, or I need some podcast about business? Do I need to just laugh for a little bit because the meeting I'm going to go to is going to be full of intensity and a joyful heart might be where I need to go? Do I want some art to just speak to me to realize my humanity? But here's the thing. I've got an Apple Music subscription, so I can listen to whatever I want music-wise. I could listen to Christian music. I could listen to classical. I could listen to jazz. I could listen to what my kids are listening to today, so I have something to talk to them about. I have full choice for that. And I have, in Pocket Cast, the top podcasts that I like. And, they're ordered by how often I listen to them. And we go from there. I like sermon series from different pastors. I really like one of my favorite podcasts is the Sacred Heart podcast by Eldridge. Because have you ever listened to it?
I've not.
It's fantastic because it's not orchestrated. It's not strategic. It's not planned. They just get together and talk about what's happening that week. And sometimes the lessons they've learned that week speak to my soul. Sometimes they don't at all in any way, shape, or form. But it's a reminder of we're all down these different paths. And I love the themes of what those guys are doing. And I think it's really, really important. And so to kind of pop in and listen to that is really, really fantastic. There are pastors who have had issues and had problems who can still teach us something. And what's funny is there are some people completely outside of the faith who have ministered to me greatly. There was a moment I was listening to a show, and I don't want to say too much here, but I was listening to a show, and two guys were talking about fantasy books they were reading with their kids. And one of the guys mentions to the other guy, "Yeah, we're reading the Chronicles of Narnia books right now." And the other guy goes, "Isn't it like religious or something or whatnot?" The other guy goes, "Yeah, I think the character Aslan is Jesus." He said, "But you know what? I like this Aslan." Hmm. At that moment, two believers making sense of. I just wow. Art, reality, moments. You know what? I like Aslan too. And it was just a moment where I had to just exhale and say, "Thank you, Lord." And that came not from a sermon. That came from a couple of nerds kind of working their way through life. So I have a number of those shows as well. But the thing is, I have it in front of me. The old days, you'd jump in the car, you'd have one cassette, and that's what you listened to. You'd jump on the plane, and the one book that you brought with you would be the one that you'd read. Now I got a Kindle full of stuff. I got an iPod full of access. I can get what I need at any given time. And that's the beautiful part. You make the decision at the moment of, and you're at a really, really good place. If there's something, if somebody's talking about something that I just don't care about, I drop that episode. I'm not a religious listener in any way, shape, or form.
And I think that's smart because there's so many shows that are out there, and what you said about knowing what you need in that moment, whether it's lighthearted or faith-inspiring or humorous, being aware of yourself and then knowing that you've got this array, I imagine it took you some time, you know, listening to things and trying them and saying, does this consistently meet this need for me, and getting a sense for what it was. But I think that's a really smart strategy that you have there.
And sometimes, Phil, sometimes what I need might be different from what the family needs, you know?
Sure.
And we try, it doesn't work out perfectly, but we try to have screenless Sundays where we just don't do screens on Sundays. Hmm. And it's life and things get in the way, and it's not the perfect plan, but there are a lot of things that I could do. So in the morning when we're getting ready for church, to make it breakfast and stuff, you know, I always have music on. And the music that speaks to my soul on a Sunday morning would probably be loud blues. the type of stuff that would just, you know, but that's not what Heidi needs. Heidi needs the quieter hymns of the faith at that point when she's getting ready. And you know what? That's what we listen to on Sunday mornings, you know, because we can. Do I own 38 CDs of the hymns of the faith? No. But here's the thing. I pay my monthly fee to Apple, and whatever we're in the mood for, we can grab. And that is powerful. That is so powerful.
Yeah, it really is. I love it, too. We also try to go for 24 hours without screens, so it's not always easy to do, but it's a very smart thing to do. Paul, I want to bring us toward close here. I'm going to ask you a couple of things, and the first thing I wanted to ask you is, I mentioned to you before the show this idea of time standing still, a moment in your life where something happened that made you stop where you were and realize there's a bigger story going on, that something that you need to pay attention to that wasn't on your horizon, the things that you were focused on in that moment suddenly become irrelevant, or at least something that you can delay. And the example that I usually give is when I watch the movie Schindler's List. When I watch that movie and I reach the end, I and everyone in the theater were in that place where suddenly we had been exposed to something. We didn't understand how deep and horrible it had been, and we'd seen a story of hope and inspired to do something about it. What would your time standing still moment be?
I'll tell you, I'm a bit of a theater nerd, and in college, Les Miserables was back at the height of all of it, and I saw the play, and the play moved me tremendously. And I, in the midst of all my homework and everything, I grabbed the unabridged version of the French novel and I started reading it. And the play is fantastic, and there's a bunch of Christian themes that are wonderful and dear. But there was this moment in the book where I realized, you know, and this is a made-up character, this is not a historical character, but the themes of Jean Valjean. And what he's put on this earth to do, and the role and the conflict, you know, although the book is, 400 years old, or at least in that time frame, that theme is eternal. And man has to make a decision what he's going to do and what he's going to live his life for, and where he's going to love and what he's going to be in this novel, dead, gone for all these years and resurrected as a play, this hundreds of years ago connection. It wasn't just the Bible was there. And it really, really, really spoke to me. And it's a fantastic book. It's a fantastic story. And I've loved the play. I love the movie musical. I thought some of the more recent movie adaptations kind of missed some of the themes. But it was just this moment, this connection through the ages, that here's the big bad college boy, you know, trying to read this book in between classes, you know, connecting to the walk of a character from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Same decisions, same movement in life. It was just a moment where I was like, wow, this is so much bigger than me. This is so much bigger than 1991 or whatever it is that I was dealing with. And it was a moment of humility, and it was a moment of just realization, you know. And I'd say, honestly, the other time is that moment on the beach that I spoke to at the right. beginning of the, you know, you know, this fact that it could have happened 18 different ways, but it happened that way, and that way spoke to my soul in such a deep, amazing way that I was just wow.
That is so cool. I appreciate that. All right, a couple more questions for you. Have you ever been mistaken for somebody famous?
No.
All right, simple. We'll move on. What's a book you've read in the last year or two that's been deeply impactful to your faith?
I just read a book, and of course the name of it is escaping me. The guy who did the fake Steve Jobs blog, Dan Lyons, I think. Hold on, it's coming. It's almost there. Look it out at the phone right now. It's a book called Disrupted, and it's the story of a guy my age who left his day job to go work at a startup. And the startup culture, and it's the story of the 40-something, 50-something, you know, immersed in the world of the 20-something. And what was interesting was there's the humor of the moment and the clash of cultures and all those things. But what really struck me in this book was that there was some wisdom and there was some strength that he could bring as the 50-year-old that the 20-year-old simply couldn't even comprehend. You know, and his journey and his path prepped him for that moment. And you know, it's by no means a book of the faith. It's by no means not even, you know, there's plenty of inappropriate words and whatnot in it. But what was so amazing was, yeah, I'm that age, and I'm now at a point where I've got some influence and I've got some wisdom by my age at this time. And if I don't put that to help others, then I'm kind of denying the good stuff of this age, because, you know, my eyesight's going and there's a whole bunch of things that are negative about this age. Might as well embrace the wisdom part. Might as well put again this place where I've been put and do something with it. So in the midst of all the laughing, in the midst of all the insanity, in the midst of all the, yeah, I've been there, done that, these unicorns are silly, there's this moment of, wait a minute, I'm at this age now for a reason. What do I have to do with this? And it had me thinking for a long time.
Which kind of ties back to the story of Les Mis, where you said the theme you resonated with is, you know, why did God put me on this earth? What am I going to be about? Disrupted is saying, hey, I'm at this stage of life for a reason. Let me embrace that and pass that on. I think those are two great themes for all of us men who are listening here, is to be fully present where we are. You know, I love, Paul, the very intentional ways you're going about protecting your family, but also embracing the good of technology and understanding the way that it can feed you and the way you can use it for influence and teach others. You've shared a lot of things here that I think are very valuable to men. First of all, before we close, what's your website where guys can go learn more about you?
PaulColligan.com is probably the best place. That's my blog. It has not been updated recently, but it will take you to the places. You know, I spoke to my private self on Facebook. There is the public side of it, and that's at PaulColligan.com/Facebook. And you know, if you're a Twitter type of person, guess what? It's PaulColligan.com/Twitter or Instagram/Instagram. You got the idea. You can find me. If the podcasting thing is of interest to you, How to Podcast Book will take you there, as will a search of whatever bookstore you happen to frequent.
Cool. I want to give you a chance, Paul, just to share maybe a closing thought that you can with the guys who are listening here through the end of our conversation. What's like one last word of wisdom that you would pass on to them as we're all sitting here trying to follow Jesus every day, and you know, the ups and downs of the weeks and months and years of life? What's something that's been meaningful to you, or that you just feel is on your heart you'd like to share with us?
We are not victims of the time we're in. We have the tech and the capacity to respond to the time that we've been placed into. You know, so many of us are like, I just don't know how to do this, so I'm just going to give it up. You know, give it to God, kind of thing. And there are definitely times in the path and the faith and in the walk when you have to do that. There have been plenty of times where I've gone to bed going, Lord, I didn't get it all. I'm going to trust tonight that you've got the rest, you know, and then sleep. But we do have the tools. We do have the tech. We do have the capacity. You can get fed now. Picking a church based on getting fed is an excuse now, as far as I'm concerned. We can get fed. We've got tools that can protect us. We can make some decisions. We are in a place of strength and power here that if we don't take, it's wrong, and in many ways morally and spiritually bankrupt. You know, and I don't want to make anyone walk away from this feeling bad, because that doesn't work. But the message is, I you can do this, and maybe you don't have 15 minutes to yourself these days because of what life's doing to you. But here's the deal: you do drive to work, you know, and maybe the right podcast on the way to work, or maybe even during your lunch break, you know, or even maybe in the background while you're working like a dog. You know, we've got options now to feed the faith, to feed the soul, to feed the family, and we should do that. We should embrace that, because that's what the strength is, man. I'd hate to get to heaven and just, you know, man, I spent way too much time on Facebook. You know, I just don't want to do that. We'll still be embraced. We'll still be loved. The streets will still be paved with gold, and there will be no regret. There will be no tears. But, you know, we're here for a purpose. We're here for a reason. Let's figure it out and do it.
Well, those are some great words of wisdom from Paul Colligan. I hope you take those words to heart as you go about today. Hey, this has been episode number 11, so you can find the show notes at maninthepew.com/011. Would you do me a favor? Would you head over to iTunes and give us a rating and review? That will help other men discover this show in the future who might need to hear these words of encouragement as we live in these days and times. Men, go out into the world today and change your world, starting at home, at work, and in your church. God bless.